A young music critic named Claude Debussy once called Gabriel Fauré the master of charms. And while Debussy didn't mean it as a compliment, his remark does contain a bit of truth. Fauré's music has always had the reputation of being a delicate, quintessentially French wine that doesn't travel well. The Master of Charms was also a master composer, but the very nature of Fauré's output prevents many people from thinking of him as great. There are no complete Fauré symphonies or concertos. Instead, he expressed his deepest musical thoughts in chamber works, songs, and piano pieces. In such Chopinesque forms as the Barcarolle, Prelude Nocturne, and Impromptu. Fauré was born in the year of Wagner's Tannhäuser and died in the year of Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. Throughout all the musical upheavals of that time, his own music retained a classical calm and balance, no matter how passionate its temper or adventurous its harmony. On the occasion of the composer's centennial in 1945, Aaron Copland said, "Fauré belongs with that small company of musical masters who knew how to extract an original essence from the most ordinary musical materials. To the superficial listener, he probably sounds superficial, but those aware of musical refinements cannot help but admire the transparent texture, the clarity of thought, the well-shaped proportions. Together, they constitute a kind of Fauré magic." That magic is difficult to analyze, but lovely to hear. Words of Aaron Copland in an essay on Gabriel Fauré from the study Classical Music, The Listener's Companion. We're invited into the musical realm mastered by Gabriel Fauré in a pair of concerts to be presented April 28th and 29th at Clark Summit University. The program will feature some of Fauré's piano pieces, songs, and the much-loved Requiem, and it will include works of Igor Stravinsky and Roger Quilter, sharing the conducting duties Dr. David Harris and Adam Schwamm, chair of the music department. Adam Schwamm paid a visit to the WVIA studios with two of the performers, Amelia Makis and Andrew Hartley, who are juniors. We began by learning more about the music department at Clark Summit University.
At Clark Summit University, the most visual things that we do are our concerts. We have two of them a year, and for Christmas we do three showings, and for spring we do two showings. And these are very much so for the community. Although, of course, people from CSU are there and present, we pick things that we think are accessible, educational, interesting for people in the community. And that, I think, speaks very highly and very succinctly to what we do as a department. So our department's goals are not only music education, training future educators, but also in training them in how to interact with the community, thinking about what can I teach them? What would they love to hear? What would be good for them to hear? What might they have never heard before?
And that sounds like what you might be addressing with this concert. How is it that you came to settle on, it's almost a Fauré festival?
That's true. The main part of the concert, which is the second half, will feature Fauré's Requiem, which is a very well-known, very popular, absolutely gorgeous choral work. But in the first half, we will be featuring not only some of Fauré's instrumental works and vocal, solo vocal, but also we have a Stravinsky, a solo violin and piano arrangement of the Puccinella Suite. And we also have two songs by composer Roger Quilter. So audience members will hear lots of Fauré, and they'll hear things that they probably haven't heard by Fauré. And they will also hear some Stravinsky and some Roger Quilter.
Tell us a little bit about your music background. Were you always playing as a little one? Were you a singer? Were you a pianist? How did you come to music?
I've been playing piano since I was four. My dad started teaching me, and I've always loved singing. And throughout high school, I had opportunity to be in choir, and it's a passion. I absolutely love to do that. So I'm excited to be able to continue that through college, and now to have the opportunity to perform as a soloist in the concert is an honor.
Now you're playing the Barcarolle solo. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you're finding as you got to know the piece.
It's so fun. I enjoy playing Debussy, and Faré is similar in the impressionistic side of things. It's a very sensitive piece, and when I play music, you know, I see things, I see pictures in my mind that I'm trying to communicate to the audience. So being able to dig into the piece and see some of the sensitivity and the complexities to his harmonies and the emotions that they make me feel is something that I want to be able to communicate through the piece to the audience.
About the form, does it matter to you that it's a barcarolle? Because we think about the Italian mm-hmm. barcarolle and so on.
Yeah, the barcarolle, right, was a Venetian boat song, so it's got the rolling 16th notes in the left hand, and the rolling helps it move along, and it's got the consistent left hand, a sparkling right hand, doing a lot of arpeggiation, and the melody passes between hands in the middle, so that's something I had to work on a lot to get the phrasing down, but it provides a lot of opportunity to phrase and to be sensitive and bring out some of those more delicate melody lines.
And so do you experience in your own mind's eye something about the water?
I do, yep. I use that as inspiration. Just, I kind of picture the canals in Venice and the gondoliers.
And how about you as a little one, Andrew?
My first kind of exposure to music was growing up in church, and I started playing piano a little bit later. My mom taught me when I was 8. And then I really didn't get exposed to classical music much until I was 12. I started taking lessons with a piano teacher. And so I've been playing for about 12 years now.
And you are going to do the Dolly Suite in the piano four hands? Or
piano four hands, yes. Yeah, the Dolly Suite, it's a duet, and it has 6 movements. We're actually just playing the first and last for good contrast. And the piece was written for Hélène Bardach, whose nickname was Dolly. And one of the interesting things about this piece is that Faré chose to use very descriptive titles, which is kind of unusual for him. He often will give titles like Barcarolle number so-and-so or Nocturne number 6. So it's very interesting to see how each of the movements has a title that very much so fits the music that he chose to write.
And this is personal then, because he did know the dedicatee, mm-hmm. and there's an intimacy in the Requiem in a certain way. So what we're learning here at the table is, at least at one side of Faré, there is that intimate way of writing and connecting with people. How did you prepare? Do you have your own sense of getting into the spirit of the piece?
Yeah, the berceuse means cradle song or lullaby. So the melody sounds like a mother singing to the child, and the accompaniment has kind of a cradle rocking gesture that underlies the melody. So we get to pass that back and forth. At the end of the piece, I have the melody, but at the beginning, Amelia has the melody.
What about playing together? Do you like that experience, Amelia and Andrew?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. In the second movement that we're playing, the Spanish piece, there's a spot where our hands actually cross over each other. So there's my 2 hands and his right hand are all playing a melody in kind of in parallel thirds. And working that out has been quite a challenge. Because not only do my 2 hands have to work together, but they have to work with his. It's an interesting experience, but it's been a lot of fun to feel it together and put the 2 parts together. We've had to figure out how to start the pieces together, how to breathe within the piece. You know, if there's a retard or an accelerando, as a soloist, you can just feel it however you want. But as a member of a duet, you have to feel it together and figure out how you're going to breathe to figure that out. You have to watch each other's hands for their cues. It's a lot of fun.
It must be exciting to see and hear the growth and maybe stand back and watch them work things out.
Yeah, in giving a student a piece of music, it is both a process of you imparting on them your experiences, not only with that particular piece, but just within the field of music, but then to see over time that piece develop on their own. They start kind of collecting their own experiences with it. And so it becomes both a personal journey for you and the student, and for the student themselves with the piece.
In a nutshell, it's kind of the way the music gets passed on in the tradition, right?
Absolutely. And you had mentioned that the Requiem and Faure's writing is intimate, which is a very good descriptor of his writing. It's very intimate. It is almost chamber-like. Even the Requiem is very chamber-like. And so as students sort of play these, as they think about them, as they process them, there are moments that are, again, intimate and very exposed, very delicate pieces. And that's tricky. That's tricky to communicate in a concert.
Just give us a little background about the Pulcinella, because that's an enchanting piece.
Yeah, so this comes from Stravinsky's experimentation as neoclassical period. So often when people hear Stravinsky, they're thinking one of his three main ballets, right? Which has become so synonymous for him as a composer that it's almost pigeonholed his harmonic and rhythmic language. But Stravinsky, it is much broader than that. His writing ability, his writing style. When I listen to this suite, I almost liken it to looking at some of Picasso's classical sketches. By that I mean, when we think Picasso, we think, okay, cubism, taking things apart and putting it back together. But when we look at Picasso's early sketches or classical studies, it's almost like looking at something Michelangelo drew. So when we see these in the Stravinsky, we see phrasing, melodic content, even harmonic content that is very accessible and beautiful. And we almost think, could this possibly be Stravinsky? Yes, it is. It is just another side to a very complex composer. And this arrangement is for solo violin and piano. So seeing how the arranger has taken much bigger context and texture and made them, again, that word intimate, is an interesting experience for the audience member.
Tell us about the songs, the mandoline and the chanson d'amour.
So those will be performed by another great student, Leanne Lemperley, and these are very quintessential foray chansons. So the audience, you mentioned juxtaposition, what we're doing here, are hoping to do in the first part of the concert, is to warm the audience member up. Here is foray functioning in other genres and with other ensembles, and then you're fully prepared for the Requiem. And then we've juxtaposed some Stravinsky in there, some Quilter in there. These two particular pieces are very quintessential of his writing. They are gorgeous. The harmonies are very evocative. They are beautiful. They are welcoming. And the text is, Foray was very good at picking texts that drew the listener in immediately. And these do that, most certainly.
And of course, the Requiem. Tell us, what was the pretext for his writing this
Sure.
piece?
Music scholars have kind of debated this. There are a couple things which may have served as the impetus for the creation of this work, but it's difficult to say for certain that one thing sort of sparked him into going, yes, I want to do a Requiem. As we look at sort of all of the reasons why that may have happened, the death of his mother and father were within roughly 2 years of the start of this work. We know its first performance was at the cathedral where he was an organist for a parishioner. So some have pointed to that. As I sort of consider the philosophy that's behind this, like, why did he choose certain texts? Why did he omit certain texts? Why is the language different from, as you mentioned, the Verdi or even the Mozart? I think what we see is Foray as a church organist director who probably performed or took part in many funeral masses, seeing other composers who chose to emphasize the Dies Irae. We think about the Verdi, where the Dies Irae keeps coming back, and it's, bombs away, basically, from the beginning, and it's 96 minutes of that. And it's a large concert work. Foray very sensitively saw that, as an organist, here were people grieving the loss of a loved one, and what they really needed was solace, comfort, reminder that much in the biblical narrative that those who are in Christ will spend eternity in sort of this pastoral scene of tranquility. And when you think of it that way, you realize that whatever the impetus was, Foray wrote in a letter, I basically wrote it for pleasure, for my own pleasure, that he saw these things in his cathedral and thought, I think I can do this more intimately. And perhaps even serve the family and those that are there, parishioners, in a more holistic way. And that can be seen in the orchestration, which was very sparse. It was for low strings, timpani, and lots of divisi. Only later were things like horns added, and then only much later, probably at the direction of his publisher, he was sort of saying, hey, maybe you should think about making this bigger. But really, from the beginning, Fauré created something that could be done with the people that were in a church to be musicians. And so as you step back and look at all of this, you see a very sensitive, very comforting work. And that sort of is what he was going for. And anyone who's heard the work can tell you that that message is very clear.
Tell us what it's like from a singer's standpoint. Everything that Adam said, do you feel that? Do you sense that?
Absolutely, yeah. My favorite movement is the Agnus Dei. And it's interesting because Fauré chose to write it much more optimistically than it's often very solemn and dark movement. But the text is based on John 1:29, where John the Baptist says, "Behold, the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sin of the world." And it's very exciting to see how this idea of this Lamb being a sacrifice, Jesus Christ, how that is in turn the hope for the last moment in Paradisum of eternal rest instead of eternal torment.
How about you, Amelia?
You can see throughout the movements the sensitivity that we've been talking about that Fauré exhibits in his writing. In the Sanctus and the In Paradisum, there's not a lot of grand harmonies. There's a lot of melody that's very soulful, very singing and sensitive. And I sing as soprano in the choir, and we have those solo melodies a lot of the time. And you feel very exposed. You're part of the choir, but you still feel like a soloist because the line is so gentle. And in the Sanctus, it's a very sparkling piece with the violin part, which we will be able to hear at this concert. It works together to comfort with the text that he has there.
What difference does it make to have the prologue of the first part playing the Dolly and the Barcarolle and hearing the other pieces? Do you think it does do what Adam was hoping it's going to do for all of us?
I think it does. I think it helps you have a sensitivity to the piece, seeing more of who Fauré was through his other writings and through the delicate barcarolle and the excitement of the Dolly suite and then the sensitivity of his vocal solos. Seeing that come together and seeing different aspects of that present in the Requiem, I think it does help you appreciate the grandeur of the Requiem a little more.
You're each dedicating your lives to music. What is the importance of music, if you could help articulate it for us, particularly at this time when we're living on our devices all the time and we're bombarded with scary news headlines? What's important about music do you see in a larger sense?
I think music is a beautiful representation of God's creation, and I think that music is a way to help people step away, just like you were saying, especially with the barcarolle. You know, when I'm playing, I want to help people have a few moments of peace. When I'm playing, I see the peaceful, whatever I'm looking at, it just sounds funny, but, you know, it might be Venice, it might be just a beautiful piece of nature that's in my mind. And when I'm playing, I'm trying to help create a peaceful atmosphere where they can meditate, where they can take a break and just breathe and detach from whatever might be bothering them. Or if they have been through something hurtful recently, use it as a time to help them heal. You know, music is very powerful and it speaks to the soul. And when I'm performing, I'm very much keeping in mind, how can I help the audience? How can I use this music to help them work through their different pains?
How about you, Andrew?
I would say along similar lines, particularly for the idea of performing music. For me, it's not really about getting recognition. I enjoy the music itself, and then I'm also very thankful that I can share my talents with others to again provide peace and also to glorify God through the talents he's given me.
And Adam, what do you see as important for music, particularly classical music?
I think there's an element of community in classical music that in some ways runs contrary to what we see and feel our fabric of society leading toward. Especially, you mentioned cell phones, and everything is tending toward individualism and being set apart and separate. And also, just contemporary events, you know, man has always contemplated, what is eternity? That has always been a question. What is that? What will it be? What will it be like? What can I ascertain or know about that now? And so, especially in a piece like a Requiem, which has such deep roots in liturgy and is a genre almost in and of itself, that we can look at other requiems and we can kind of cross-compare the Verdi, the Mozart, the Brahms. I think that music in general, for myself, a life lived in music is extremely fulfilling. Music contains such enormous beauty. To say that they cause goosebump moments is not deep enough. There are times when music is so overcoming that words fail. I think of the Mendelssohn quote, which I'll have to paraphrase, but something to the effect of, for Mendelssohn, music was so specific that, you know, we think of his Lieder ohne without words, that it didn't need that, that it was so specific to him that was already there. What we're trying to do whenever we program music is to kind of speak that unspoken language, to communicate to people deeper truths. And in so doing that, there is comfort in that. This concert takes place in the Murphy Library, which is a gorgeous venue. It's very, very intimate. It only seats a couple hundred. So when audience members listen to it, they feel like they're in it. And what's wonderful about that is that's exactly what we want them to feel like. We want them to feel like this is not, as Fauré planned it, this is not a concert work. This is an experience. Their participation is just that. Being there is a form of participation. And so these are encouraging messages for, as you said, a world right now which feels very confused. We're very concerned about a lot of things. These messages, the translations which will be in the program, I believe the audience members will come to this, and what will be communicated is what Fauré planned, comfort.
Adam Schwamm, chair of the Department of Music at Clark Summit University, with two juniors, Amelia Makis and Andrew Hartley, each one of them a pianist, each one of them a singer, and they will both be part of the concerts on April 28th and 29th, this Friday and Saturday evenings at Clark Summit University, 538 Bernard Road, South Abington Township. Dr. David Harris will share the conducting duties with Adam Schwamm, and they will present this exquisite work, the Requiem of Gabriel Fauré, but also Barcarolle No. 4, and Amelia will perform that by Fauré. The Fauré Dolly Suite will be performed by Amelia and Andrew. There will be songs by Gabriel Fauré and also by Roger Quilter, and the Suite Italienne, the Pulcinella Suite of Igor Stravinsky for violin and piano. For more information on the web, clarkssummitu.edu, clarkssummitu.edu. The concerts will take place at 7 in the evening, and that's Clark Summit University, 538 Bernard Road, South Abington Township, and it's this Friday and Saturday, April 28th and 29th. For more information on the web, clarkssummitu.edu, clarkssummitu.edu.